6 minutes after 1 o'clock on a very cold Monday, December the 15th, as we head into a brand new week. And I guess we're not going to get a break in the action for weather. Joe Chiaro is with us in the new studio. But remember this time last week we were talking about there was a big, incredible cold mass of air over Siberia. And we were talking about this last week and it was heading this way.
That's right. You gave us the good news.
Oh, you know, and I feel so much better about that. You know,
you should. And we're getting moisture, too.
Moisture. We're getting, and I guess we got more moisture coming in, what, late tomorrow night into Tuesday morning, is that right?
Let's see. Tonight, 1 to 3 inches.
Here?
Possible.
In the city?
Here in the city, yes.
Ooh, more moisture.
That's great. And with it cold air.
Yeah, it ain't going nowhere.
It's not going anywhere.
No, it's turned to ice out there. I guess you know that. You've been driving on it.
Yeah, I kind of assume that, yep.
Well, the good news is it's not sloppy, and so it doesn't refreeze. It's been so cold, none of it's melted. The bad news is this is that light, fluffy stuff that after a while turns to black ice.
Right.
In no time at all.
And the CDOT crews are trying, but there's only so much they can do when it's this cold.
Yeah, what can you do? I mean,
there's sand. They're putting sand down.
Yeah, there are a couple of hills off Union, coming off Union and off Yosemite, and they've laid down the sand on the uphills and as best they can. You know, I don't know how long this is going to last, though.
it's going to be here for several days.
Oh, goody! Yeah, you know, well, you know, and this is. This just reminds you what winter's really like around here.
It's
not even winter yet.
Well, no, it's not.
It's not even winter yet. It's still fall.
It's great fall we're having.
Hey, you know, and by God.
We've set back-to-back records. A record broken at midnight and...
last night.
Last night. 18 below.
18 below last night.
At DIA.
Wow. That was Sunday into Monday.
Right.
No, that was Saturday night and Sunday morning.
No. That was Sunday night.
Sunday night.
18 below, and then as we started Monday at midnight.
It's still night.
Another record broken.
So it's now 14 below at the airport?
It was 15.
15 below.
Last time I looked, but I'd have to.
And they expect this, they anticipate this is going to drop down a few more degrees before the morning.
Probably, yeah.
And we have more moisture coming. Oh, goody.
It's always a good feeling, too.
You know, when you
have to go out to your car.
And,
you know, I'll be going out there a little bit after two.
Yeah. Well, this is the time. You've probably seen this. I've seen it. I never understood it because people who live here should know better. You know, people who live in Wyoming and South Dakota and North Dakota and Montana and points north. I don't know if you've ever lived in those parts.
No.
It gets always so cold anyway. So they have these little oil warmer plugs that they plug in.
Oh, the motor.
Yeah.
Dipstick.
I think they call it a dipstick. Yeah, well, they also have them where they have actually a plug in the oil pan. And what it does, it just keeps the oil from turning into a brick.
Uh-huh.
Down here, we assume we don't have to do that.
Well, you know, normally, I guess.
What's normal? This is Colorado.
18 below, apparently.
Yeah, that's normal. Yeah, that's normal. So people turn their engines on in the morning and they roar off.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen this? You know, they turn it on and they put it in gear and they're gone.
Oh, yeah. They don't let it warm up. So there's no lube in the engine.
There's no oil at all. You know. And I'm thinking, you know, one of these days, you know, they'll be pulling out of the driveway, and the engine will just go kaboom.
Or they'll start it up, and then they'll race it.
Oh, yeah.
Never do that either.
Oh, actually, a good one. Yeah, well.
Let it idle slowly for
about 3 minutes.
For a while. Until
yeah, 3 minutes is good enough.
Yeah,
that'll get it going. But people don't do that.
Kind of premature engine wear there, certainly.
Yeah, well, it's like erectile dysfunction, only different. So
really? I have to think about that.
Yeah, well, alrighty then. Yeah, that, get them juices flowing, boys.
You'd certainly have dysfunction with these temperatures.
Yep. So anyway, I guess the traffic's mostly moving okay at this hour.
Yeah, there's not too much out there.
Although this time tomorrow night, we might be doing bottom of the hour traffic updates. I reckon this time tomorrow night.
If we get that snow.
Yeah, I think, oh, God, help us. Well, and by the way, I was looking on the Weather Channel. This mass of air covers everything all the way down to Texas.
Yeah, I was looking earlier, too, and even farther up north, North Dakota, some of those places, I think I saw some temperatures even colder than us.
So, yeah, well, minus 20. Minus 25?
Yeah,
minus 25 in Fargo. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, it's cold up there, eh? So,
yeah.
Yeesh.
And, it's a slow mover, too.
Yeah, and that's the trouble with it. When it gets this cold, it's like molasses. It doesn't go anywhere. All we can hope is that the skies will clear. But, you know, we got snow, so I don't think the sky will clear. You know, as long as we get the sun, we're good.
Yeah, later today we should get some.
I hope so.
And but still, highs in the teens.
So. Yippee. Well, it'll just kind of give us reason to rejoice come the spring.
I'll say.
Yeah.
So anyway. I rejoice every spring and tell myself I'm not going to experience another winter here. But
we
keep coming back for more.
Well, you know, and by golly, here we are, eh?
It's great.
By the way, up in the New England and New York area, I talked to a friend of mine. They've had ice storms.
Yeah.
Ice.
And, they're still having a lot of problems up there.
Yeah, so I want my global warming.
Well, that would be nice.
Where's my global warming?
We need global warming.
I'm thinking, you know, where's my global warming? Give me my global warming. It's like, I want my MTV. So I want my global warming.
We break a record that's been around for 107 years.
Good grief.
So I don't know. I don't know about that global warming.
Yeah. Well, it's somewhere, but it ain't here.
It's down in the Bahamas.
Okay, let's go. All right. All right, Joe, thanks so much.
You bet.
All right, very good indeed. All right, we got a double shot coming up at 3 o'clock. Tim the Car Guy Harp going to be with us, although it says here he's going to call us this morning. I don't know if he's going to be in the studio or not. But he says he allegedly is going to call us just past 3 o'clock. We'll see. It's either that or he's going to be in the studio. And at the top of the show, Michael Tobias going to talk about mass extinction, Hot Spots, a new documentary film that's on PBS, and a documentary 3 years in the making. And we'll talk about mass extinctions. And by the way, if you went to see The Day the Earth Stood Still, first of all, interesting. Second of all, you've heard of movies that run out of money? This one just ran out of ideas. It was Leesy saying, where's the rest of the movie? So anyway, we're going to talk about mass extinctions. First off, all right, if today's your birthday, you Sagittarians out there, the symbol of which is the archer, thought to be friendly, philosophical, and optimistic. Born on this day in A.D. 37, 37 Anno Domini, or after the Common Era, if you will. Much of Rome burned during his reign as emperor, but led reconstruction of the city, and then blamed it on, well, you know, anybody but, you know, the people who were involved, Nero. That's right, the Emperor Nero. Some say he was the 666 of Revelations, that in fact it was Nero. And born on this date, the guy who built the Eiffel Tower, Alexandre Gustave Eiffel, was born on this date in 1832. Jean, if you will, J. Paul Getty, American oil exec and financier, born on this date in 1892. And the other guy nobody cares about. Let's see. On this date in 1791, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, known as the Bill of Rights, became law following ratification by the state of Virginia, which, by the way, gave us a heck of a lot of presidents back in those days. And on this date in South Dakota in 1890, the Sioux leader Sitting Bull was arrested on suspicion of leading an uprising. You know, so, by the way, then was killed in, quote, a gunfight. Somehow I just don't see him as a fast draw guy. Yeah. Anyway, well, we're going to talk about something that, you know, well, with the release of the movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still with Keanu Reeves. This may be as timely as anything, because if you went to see it, you know it's about how the Earth is an ark, and the ark is being poisoned by one of its species. And we're going to talk about just that, about a three-year documentary for PBS that's going to, as they say, help Americans see how life on Earth is going to change. But the bottom line, life on Earth is apparently dying off. The good news, people everywhere are waking up to it. And it's my guest is involved in this directly, in fact. And we're going to talk with Dr. Mitchell Tobias. Dr. Tobias, good morning.
Good morning. It's Michael. How are you?
Michael.
Yeah.
All right, Michael. By the way, I don't know if you ever saw that that film with Keanu Reeves that just was released over the weekend.
Well, I saw the original, which we love, so I'm looking forward to seeing this.
Yeah, well, this one is different. Rather than nuclear weapons, the species is killing off the life on the planet, and the planet is one of the very few in, although he says the universe, I kind of find that hard to believe. But in the
I love the line that they've quoted so many times now in the ads, when it's not your planet.
It's not your planet, yeah.
Right.
Well, very well. Whose is it? Apparently it belongs to cephalopods. But anyway, we're going to talk about this. First of all, how are you involved in putting this together? You're the producer and director?
I wrote, directed, produced the film, and I'm the president of the foundation that was also the production entity for the film, which is the Dancing Star Foundation.
Mm. Of course, you know, we live in an age where there's so many things that are happening, and so each one of them just critical mass issues. But you say mass extinction right now is the mother of all the issues.
Mm. Yeah, I think it is, and I'm certainly not alone. There's no question that we're firefighting a tremendous number of urgent crisis-level situations around the world. But as someone once put it, I think pretty clearly, nature is not inside the human economy. The human economy resides inside nature, and we're losing it. We're losing it so fast that it's actually unprecedented in the last half a billion years that life has been really prospering in a profuse way. And we've never seen anything like it. So the answer is absolutely. Biodiversity, or the diverse environmental taxa, all the plants and animals and insects and sea creatures and so on and so forth, they're disappearing from right under us. And you don't notice it until they're gone. That's like that old Joni Mitchell song, you know.
They pave paradise.
Put up a parking lot. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's certainly the bad news, and there's certainly a reason to wake up in the morning and debate with yourself as to whether the glass is half empty or half full. But we're definitely at that tipping point.
How is it that this topic has become so political?
Well, it's certainly political, because politics, after all, if you go back to the ancient Greek meaning of the polis, is about people and how they organize their lives, how they maximize their happiness during their fleeting stay on this planet, if you will, and how money is allocated, how scarce resources end up in various deep or not deep pockets. It's all about us, unfortunately, or fortunately. So politics comes into it in a way that frustrates the scientific community, often frustrates young people. I think the recent election has seen a resounding call to young people to get back involved and use politics perhaps as a mechanism for expressing themselves creatively and forcefully. So that's a topic, to be sure, but it is politicized, and one of the big things that we're hoping for and advocating for is that scientists will be taken more seriously in the future, because there have been years now where they haven't been.
I was watching a brief bit last night on news with Sean Hannity talking about precisely this issue, about, of course, global warming as being a topic that seems to fit right in here. But there are those, even President Bush admits global climate change is happening. Now, how one puts that together is, what does that mean, but also the causes, and I suppose it's the cause that's become so political. But it's always been generally my attitude is if something is different, something's going right or going wrong, there has to be a cause of something or other. And you start looking back to something that was added to the mix, as they say, in a period of time that somehow or other wasn't there before.
Well, look, there's no question that our species, which is a new species, and that, forget any religious debates about it, at least from my perspective, the science is pretty unambiguous at this point, that we've been around for about 120, 125,000 years as Homo sapiens sapiens. That year may be pushed back further as new skeletons and DNA is detected, but for now, we've been around for a very short period of time relative, let's say, to a butterfly, the state butterfly of Colorado, for example, your hair streak, which has been around a lot longer than we have. It took fourth graders to advocate to make, you know, the hair streak, the Colorado state butterfly, and it finally was made that. But as a species, we are kids. We are ourselves a young species, and we came on the scene. And all the data from around the world shows that for about the first half of our stay here, we left a very light footprint. We are almost not detectable at all. And then we started arousing curiosity, if you will, by our muscle man mentality, which was displayed with great panache, with tremendous ingenuity, with global forcefulness. Such that if you dig up some of the cave embers and sift around through the fossil evidence, you'll see that we were exerting massively our penchants to destroy. Now, there's others who will argue that just as we were destroying, we were also, you know, enlisting the sort of female side of our personality, and we were gathering rather than hunting. And anthropologists continue debate, you know, whether we are violent by nature or not, and the evidence and the jury is still out, because even since the time of the Renaissance in the, let's say, mid-1600s, we have killed about 250 million of one another, of other people. Psychologists will be the first to testify that most of that violence these days takes place in the home.
All right, can you hold on a second, Dr. Tobias? We have to take a commercial break, but please hold on. We'll pick it up where we left off. And we're talking with Dr. Michael Tobias and Mass Extinction's Hotspots, a documentary that starts this month, a new PBS documentary. Tobias is the film's producer, director, and writer, and talks about mass extinction, as he says, is the mother of all issues. 303-713-8585, the number 23 minutes after 1 o'clock. You're listening to News Radio 850 KOA.
The snowman was a jolly, happy soul, with a corncob pipe and a button nose, and his eyes made out of coal. Frosty the snowman made the children laugh and play, and were they surprised when before their eyes he came thump-thump over the hills of snow.
All right, boy, that's what I call a cut in the middle of a song. Hey, what? They're edited strangely, I guess. Why don't we just kind of keep them, you know, long and you know, the whole thing? Well, what are you going to do? Well, it's cold out there, and by the way, going to remain cold for the next few, 4 or 5 days, and even a chance of some snow. But right now, as we take a look over at the airport's temp, that's the official reporting station, as you know, for temperatures, minus 15. Minus 15, right? It says it feels like minus 29. You know, there's a point at which it doesn't make any difference. I mean, it's so cold you couldn't tell. You just freeze. Throughout the rest of the night, partly cloudy, patchy, dense fog after midnight. Let's hope that doesn't happen. Lows anywhere from 10 below to 20 below. 20 below is what they're predicting in some spots. It'll be coldest in the northern and the eastern burbs. Later on today, sunny, mostly sunny, becoming mostly cloudy late on in the afternoon with a 10% chance of snow late in the day with highs only topping 18. And then Monday night, snow likely, accumulation of anywhere from 1 to 3 inches with low temperatures 1 to 7 degrees. And as we look at the 1, 2, 3, 4 days forecast for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, snow flurries. And cold. So right now, minus 15 official degrees outside the studio. It's about minus 17. 303-713-8585, the number, as we continue back again with Michael Tobias. By the way, a lot of people say, well, you know, it's so darn cold out there, and we're taking a look at the weather right now. And, of course, there was a wonderful movie. Now, I say wonderful. A lot of people don't like it. I happen to like it a lot, called The Day After Tomorrow. Are you familiar with that flick?
Oh, sure.
Okay. This has to do with a phenomenon that has been regarded as being an interesting kind of paradox weather-wise, that ice ages, even the Younger Dryas, which happened about 12, 13,000 years ago, was preceded by a spike in temperatures. And a lot of people say, well, that was then, this is now. What's your perspective on something like that? Well, here we are watching these incredibly cold temperatures. There are those right now, in fact, I was just reading this morning on one of the websites that cooling trend illustrates how fast the world is warming. This is on AP. Do you have any, Seth Bornstein, by the way, wrote the article on it, but do you have any look on that one? I mean, how this seems to be, although paradoxical, it is an indicator of some kind?
Well, it's only paradoxical from a perspective of a species that is looking at a point in time from different parts of the planet. The Younger Dryas that you referred to was actually also in the news recently because a Swedish-Danish expedition in Greenland ran into an offshore island about 80 miles off the southeastern coast of Greenland and discovered that there's land there. It had been covered by ice. The ice has been receding so fast that we're actually seeing the emergence of new islands that are getting named all the time. And they discovered a couple of species on the rock form. There was about a mile and a half of exposed rock, and they saw this way off in the distance and sped away to this place, landed on it, and discovered species from the Younger Dryas that had been hidden under the ice all this time. I mean, we've known for a long time about the cyclical nature of weather on Earth, and we're learning more and more about it all the time. I don't think the jury's out, though, as to the human-induced acceleration of vast and rapid change. What we don't know and what we're learning daily is how global warming at this point in time is going to impact biodiversity, what behavioral changes are all living creatures going to have to make to succeed, which means live or die. And we're seeing dramatic evidence from place to place, particularly in the temperate areas, less so in the tropics yet, because after all, if you think about it, it's logical that they're more accustomed in the tropical belts, the equatorial belts, to heat. But in the temperate areas, where in a place like Colorado, for example, which has a large number of existing threatened and endangered species, you have instances where butterflies and birds and insects have nowhere to go when they keep going uphill, searching for an escape route, if you will, from adverse weather. We see it in San Francisco Bay with a classic study that in the last few years has demonstrated conclusively, for example, that the endemic checker spot butterfly of the San Francisco area has headed about 100 miles north, trying to find species that, relative to any other butterfly in any other part of the world where the caterpillar needs to rest somewhere and where there's got to be a feeding regime, whether it's an oak tree that's going to be rich with aphid honeydew or some other substance that the young butterfly, when it hatches in the spring, is going to rely upon. all of that is being shifted now, and the birds in turn, which feed upon the butterfly and so on, is going to have to leave sooner to catch up with the butterfly, and if it gets its timing wrong, its chicks will die. So we're seeing this everywhere. In the Arctic, the red fox and the Arctic fox. Even in a place like Argentina, you've got honeybees that are freaking out and moving north or moving south. And certainly with penguin species, we're seeing it because they're having to swim further distances to find the krill, which is moving further and further south as the icebergs get warmer and warmer and move north. So if the penguin does not have the metabolic energy that would allow it, let's say, to swim an extra 3 weeks to find food for its young, they're gone. And we're seeing that happening in the Southern Convergence Ocean. So, I mean, you could take example after example. And what it all adds up to is global warming is one of the massive changes that human beings have abetted and accelerated. Our own consumption, of course, in general, being a huge driver behind all of this.
Is given that we're watching these extraordinary events, and as you say, it's cyclical, and I've also, I mean, you can go online or you can pick up books that say, you know, this is not to have anything to do with us, and if it does, our impact is only minimal, that these are cyclic issues, that the climate, we have no records long enough to show us exactly what is going on, that what we may be witnessing is something that nature has been doing for a very, very long time. Do you agree or disagree with that?
Well, nature has been self-inflicting. It does by nature. What I'd like to try to convey real clearly is the fact that when we're talking about the loss of biodiversity and massive losses, which today are being called by a consensus of the scientific community the sixth mass extinction in the last 500 million years, the difference now is that even if one were to embrace the notion that global warming is normal, that it happens periodically, sweeps the planet, there are losers and winners and onward, that has been the case, but it hasn't been global warming that has been the culprit. It has been some other massive anomaly like a meteoroid or a gigantic upwelling of gases from the oceanic depths, or the fact that species do by nature go extinct. And let's talk about that for a minute, because mm-hmm. it's really critical to understand that what's happening now, if you actually chart on a simple graph the number of species that we're losing, depending on the region in question, it's going to vary, but if you look at all the regions in question, which is the entire planet, where life prospers, we're losing up to 1,000 species a day. Now, the natural rate for extinction loss is between 1 and 3 species every million years. That is big headlines, which is unfortunately not getting the level of carriage it should. It's so beyond that you have to just stand back bewildered and ask yourself, how is this possible? What's also different with the current extinction is that if you make that graph that I postulate, we're seeing that within about 16,000 years, 96% of all life on Earth will be gone. And now systematists or scientists who study at a systemic level, the loss of biodiversity. We're seeing that it's not just species that are disappearing. We also want to talk about populations. And Norman Myers, who's a scientist from Oxford who coined the title of our film, but going back to 1987 when he first came up with this methodology known as hotspots, he recently came out with an analysis based on the shared data of hundreds of scientists around the world that we're losing approximately 43,000 populations every day out of an estimated 2.3 billion populations on Earth. This is a whole new way of thinking about what's going on. It's a bit comparable to thinking about human consumption, not in terms of individuals, but in terms of households, because households exert a very heavy ecological footprint, oftentimes much more than an individual. An example of that would be probably the building that you're broadcasting from. Mm. Such buildings, cumulatively, are producing about a third of all global warming emissions. And so that would be a very massive household, a big building filled with people working and all of the energy needs and outputs. And so you can think about individuals, you can think about households, and biologists are thinking about the populations, and we're losing about 43,000 a day. So at that rate, in 16,000 years, the estimates are that 96% of all life on this planet will have gone extinct. Nothing like that has happened ever in the recorded annals of biology on Earth. Nothing. So we have to attribute this to what is pretty obvious, and that's all of the different impacts that we're having as a species. All of the new roads that we're building, all of the new cities. I mean, we are building, even now, a Los Angeles about every 3 weeks on planet Earth. That's staggering stuff. When I first started tracking the impact of human population on the biosphere, back in the early 90s, in preparation for the famous UN Cairo conference, we were adding about 92 million people every year to the planet. Now we're down to about 79, 80 million per year. But that still adds up to a huge number. And then all of the needs, all of the consumption that goes with that. Is it any wonder that we're just wiping out creatures willy-nilly? It is terrifying, and I do think it's unprecedented, and it's not just about global warming. That's why we call this sixth great extinction spasm the mother of all issues, because global warming is one of the disasters, if you will, that's hitting hard and hammering home. Again, another insult on top of injury to these species.
All right, hold on a second, Dr. Tobias, and when we come back, we'll go to the telephone. We're talking with Michael Tobias. He is the producer, director, and writer of a PBS documentary special that's going to air this month and run, it's been 3 years in the making. It'll run through 2009. As they say, well into 2009, called Hotspots. And it profiles pioneers, of course, among other things, of a new kind of unsung hero around the world who are working to save Earth's last life banks from complete collapse. 303-713-8585, the number, it's 140. We'll take a quick break. We'll continue on momentarily. I'm Rick Barber. You're listening to News Radio 850 KOA. Something from the 1930s or 40s. 142-303-713-8585, the number, as we continue on. And again, we're talking with Dr. Michael Tobias, who is the writer, producer, and director of a PBS special, 3 years in the making, called Hotspots. Given what the data you have and you're going to present, first of all, when does it air?
I don't know to be sure in the Denver area. People can go to the Hotspots website to find out where in their specific region it is airing. It's already premiered in Los Angeles and San Francisco and a few other places. Actually, sorry, it premieres in San Francisco Monday night. It premiered 2 weeks ago in Los Angeles and other parts of the country. But go to the Hotspots website, which is www.hotspots-thefilm.org.
Okay.
Or you can go to our website, which is dancingstarfoundation.org, and it has all the places around the country.
All right, but it'll be called Hotspots, so they can check their local listing, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go to the telephone, and we'll pick it up. Mark in Thornton. Mark, you're on with Michael Tobias. Good morning.
Good morning. I wanted to ask Tobias if his film has included the voice of indigenous people who have for a long time acknowledged this destruction. We dance ceremonially with pine, and so many people assume that this pine beetle is just that, a pine beetle, and for us to see the destruction of complete forests, not allowing the people to dance with pine anymore, is a major message, as well as the Inuits and the Eskimo, the wet food people, recently bringing forward a $400 million lawsuit against the oil corporations for the loss of their ancestral lands and burial places as a result of global warming. I'm asking you, is our voice included in your film?
Yes, it is there indeed. It doesn't focus on what you're so beautifully conveying, but it does. For example, in the New Zealand hotspot, we do hear the voice of a Maori elder.
Mm-hmm.
Speaks
yes.
of the fact that we're merely guardians of the land.
Yes.
I'm fascinated by your reference to the bark beetle, because I was recently in Colorado, where I spent a lot of years growing up, and I was, of course, disheartened, like so many, I'm sure, local Coloradans are, to see the devastation. If you drive from Denver to Aspen, for example, you'll see
yes.
just forest after forest that's being hit. And the arguments for the scientific conclusion as to why it's happening are also at variance, whether you go from New Mexico or Colorado or all the way up to Alaska. But I really appreciate what you're saying in terms of the long-time recognition of indigenous spirituality. And we do, it is certainly there. In fact, in our film, one of the opening major sequences takes place from Madagascar, and the indigenous Malagasies are the ones who really have the shamanic knowledge, the long-term acquaintance and love affair with their backyard. They're the ones that Western scientists must go to just to begin their 101 course in what's going on here. And they're the ones who are the true stewards of nature. And so we do try to give some level of recognition to that. But it's really a TV series that would easily be 100 hours, if you will, because there's no question about it that the indigenous spirituality on this planet, which goes back tens and tens of thousands of years, has provided a message to the descendants who are ourselves, that if you don't get it right, if you don't make peace with nature, if you don't fall in love with all living creatures, you're doomed. And that message does resonate in the film.
And can you believe the level of resistance at the very core of the cognitive spirit? That's what is unbelievably difficult for us to realize. It is almost, in essence, not only a conquest of the land, but it is also a conquest of the spirit. And our dances to honor the four-legged beings, in particular our deer dances and buffalo dances,
mm-hmm.
Have been even more significant now, especially with wasting away diseases affecting the animals that we consume to live with. And I would hope that your film would initiate a dialogue that adjusts the curriculum that our children are exposed to in the schools.
Well, it's not, you know, 1 2-hour movie can't be all things to all groups, but it does reference it, and I would like to take the opportunity to thank you for bringing it up. In fact, as I'm sure you know, just last, let's see, the 11th, that would have been Thursday, was International Mountain Day, according to the United Nations, and it was named that in honor of the nearly 1.5 billion people, mostly indigenous alpine people
yes.
around the world,
mm-hmm.
and the 3.3 billion people who are affected by the drinking water, which comes from sacred streams and sacred waterfalls and sacred glaciers.
Yes.
And they all have a food insecurity crisis now because of climate change, which they've had almost no contribution to in their lifestyle.
Yes.
So here we have a situation where approximately half of the world, of the 6.7 billion humans currently on this planet, approximately half of them are in dire straits because the lowland areas that should be receiving the perennial water are drying up, and they're not able to grow their seasonal grasses, their cereals, and quasi-cereals. They're having to grow cash crops and sell them just to survive. So this is a huge environmental refugee issue. This is a huge indigenous ethics issue. And that's how these problems need to be framed. I mean, in the Amazon this past year, 07, we saw a 3.8% increase in Brazilian deforestation. And that's despite the government's plan, if you will, to make so-called zero net deforestation their achievement by the year 2015. The only way they're going to do that is by wiping out most of the indigenous Amazonian Indians.
All right. And with that, Mark, I must move on, but thanks for calling.
Kuta, kuta.
Okay.
These are all big hot topics in the hot spots.
All right. Very good. Hold on. We're going to take another break, and we'll pick it up where we left off with, again, Dr. Michael Tobias. He is the writer, producer, director of a PBS special to air this month called Hot Spots, and talking about how mass extinctions are actually happening as we speak. 303-713-8585, the number. It's 10 minutes away from 2 o'clock. We continue. I'm Rick Barber. You're listening to News Radio 850 KOA.
Said the little lamb to the shepherd boy, do you hear what I...
All right. You know, I always like it when somebody checks out one of my sponsors, because I'm always grateful that people do want to find out whether or not what I tell you is true. And, of course, my director this week, Thera Marshall, went to Sam Taylor's, what was it, last Friday or Thursday? Friday. Yeah, and he, you know, unfortunately, his mic is not working. But, you know, this is one of those, you know, kind of a testimonial, albeit somewhat solicited, certainly, in fact, truthful. And his reaction is, yeah. It's thumbs up. If you don't believe me, just call and ask with Thera and say, okay, you went. Is it true? Is he putting us on? And, of course, the answer is no, I'm not. It is that good. I go once a week. I always tell people at least once a week, sometimes twice a week, I go over there and either eat there or carry out. And I always tell people, if you come over and I'm there and you come on over and say, hey, you Rick Barber, and as long as you don't have anything in your hand, I'll be more than glad to buy you a drink. You know, just simple as that. People say, well, what if I don't drink? Well, whatever it is you're drinking. I mean, you're going to drink tea. You're going to drink some kind of soft drink or something, if not something a little more adult, as they say. So I'm always glad to do that. I'm always glad to have people show up and see whether or not I'm not making it up. And, of course, I'm not making it up. But don't forget, you can also go online to their website, samtaylorsbbq.com, and check out what they have, including, by the way, the coupon list. If you go on the menu board on the left right there as you enter the site, and it says coupons, click on coupons and then print them out. You say, well, I don't have a printer at home. Do you have a printer at work? I said, yeah, but the boss don't like that. Well, I don't know what to tell you. What am I going to do? I don't know. But if you can't. Oh, and don't forget, they have Wi-Fi. They got wireless internet right there at the restaurant at Sam Taylor's, so you can go over there and enjoy in the middle of the day while you're working. You can also have lunch or in the afternoon, you know, just have a quick munch, a nosh, as they say. And don't forget, they're still taking orders for holiday parties. Sam Taylor's Catering, without a doubt, incredible. Barbecue pork ribs, the smoked beef brisket, the hickory smoked chicken, the baked beans, the potato salad. Their homemade coleslaw, their Texas toast, includes, by the way, the plates, the napkins, serving utensils. They come in, they set up, they do the serving line, they break down, they split, and you can go party. How's that? Is that not bad or what? That's right. Sam Taylor's, of course, on the east side of town, if you've ever been there. Or if you've not been there, it's on the east side. It's right there in Glendale, one of those enclave towns of which we're so famous. But they're open Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah, they'll be open at 11 o'clock this morning, so you can get on over there and have lunch. They're in Glendale. Sam Taylor's Barbecue is best in the West, without a doubt, at 435 South Cherry, right off Leechdale. All right, 155 as we continue, 303-713-8585, the number, as we head on up to the news break, of course, with Joe Chiaro, back again with Dr. Michael Tobias, producer-director of Hotspots, a PBS documentary that's going to air starting this month and run right through into 2009. When we look at countries like Brazil, of course, the Amazon rainforest, we look at Borneo and other rainforest areas, and I don't know if Malaysia is in the list. But there's certainly areas that are being denuded by logging and farming and changing land into grazing for cattle, for instance, in Brazil. The governments in question, are these individual governments concerned? I would think that they may pay lip service, but are they actually doing anything?
Well, it's certainly a critical question because about 20% of all life forms that we know of on the planet are aggregated in those rainforests. It's not only a global warming issue in terms of avoiding future deforestation, but it really does place a spotlight, an unwelcome spotlight, on those governments and all of the critters that are dependent on the choices that they make. So you're absolutely right. I mean, it is a question that has been debated. A lot of countries like Brunei, Indonesia, and Malaysia, they signed recently the Borneo Pact, by which they agreed to stave off future deforestation in order to save, among others, iconic species like the orangutan, which are in deep trouble. Brazil, as I indicated a minute ago, saw a 3.8% increase in deforestation, and they're going to try to neutralize that in the next 6 years by reforestation. But one of the critical issues for us who look at the biodiversity is that you do not get anywhere near the same level of biodiversity in a reforested area as you do in an old forest. So these are terrible dilemmas, and we don't propose any obvious solutions, although the United Nations Environmental Program, the Convention on Biological Diversity, every single government that has signed on to that convention is frantically working to come up with new mechanisms to actually pay and repatriate and find ways to monetize incentives so that governments like Malaysia's and Brazil's will in fact follow through with their own internal mandates to stop cutting down primary forests. That said, I should also point out that the United States is one of the only countries left on the planet that has not ratified the Convention on Biological Diversity. It was sent to the Senate floor with thumbs up by the Clinton administration in 1993. The Senate has yet to take it up and ratify it. And all this convention is a collection of almost all the nations of the world that have agreed that biodiversity, that the creation, is worth saving. And we should make every effort we can to protect it. And thus far, the United States is almost alone in the world.
Why?
Well, there's a lot of issues behind it that, if you track it, if you Google it, you'll see for yourself, rather than going into a lengthy discussion, but it involves a lot of special interest groups in Washington that were principally driven by a U.S. stand on intellectual property rights that looked at pharmaceuticals, that looked at cattle ranching, that looked at all the genetics that might be derived from some of the rainforests in the world, and wanted to basically assert American rights through the corporate structure to such property rights. And so that became a sticking point, and it's never been readdressed. But there was a conference in Washington last week where the executive director of the Convention on Biological Diversity, based in Montreal, part of the UN, basically begged and pleaded with the United States and said, look, guys, it's time for you to wake up and sign this thing.
All right. Your documentary begins sometime this month. People can check their PBS listing or go to your website, which is what...
www.dancingstarfoundation.org.
And Dr. Tobias, I want to thank you so much. Good luck with your work. I hope things work out better.
I really, we're getting there. I really appreciate the time this evening. Thank you.
All right.
So
thank
much.
You very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. News coming up on News Radio 850 KOA.